Welcome back to Monty and Rias versus Movies.
Post-apocalyptic. Dick. I thought it was just post-apocalypse.
It might be.
It is just post-apocalypse.
Post-apocalypse. It's not post-apocalypse. It's definitely post-apocalyptic.
I think it's post-apocalypse.
This is what the podcast is about now.
The title of our podcast is Rias and Monty.
Hang on.
Versus Movies.
I agree with that part.
Colon.
Yes.
Post-apocalypse. Because that's the genre of movies that we're versing. And by versing, I mean performing as poetry at our local slams.
And you think that it's Rias and Monty instead of Monty and Rias?
Well, I think that. It may not be true, but it's what I like to think.
Let's see who got top billing. Oh, it's Monty and Rias versus Movies, but post-apocalypse.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel bad.
We're both right.
I have told everybody post-apocalyptic. I've been out there on the fields. I've been out hyping this thing up, Rias. I was on a game show hyping it up.
I think they'll find it from Monty and Rias versus Movies.
Yeah, but what about
once we start versusing other kinds of movies?
Yeah, and we are planning on doing that. Like
at some point, yeah. Maybe we'll be versing slasher films.
Hmm.
Maybe we'll be versing film noirs.
Maybe we'll be versing detective movies from the 70s, where it's just a guy in a mustache and suspenders shooting people.
Oh, yeah. We could do that.
There's no way of knowing, but we should probably decide in the next 2.5 months.
Got it.
But right now, I'd say we are firmly in the post-apocalypse phase of Monty and Rias versus Movies. And, you know, that includes movies that take place after an apocalypse. You know, there's this whole genre of movies where it's not set in regular times, but imagine that something bad has happened, like a war or a disease, and now civilization has crumbled.
Right. We don't want to see civilization as it crumbles.
No.
No.
We're not going to watch Mad Max.
No. But we would watch Road Warrior.
We probably should watch Warrior, right?
Absolutely. Road Warrior is a good time.
Road Warrior is what every one of these movies, except maybe The Postman, has been directly based on. In some cases, to the point where they could have gotten sued.
Yeah, in some cases, very, very strong. But
now, this week, and week is a vague term, we've got a special movie entitled Steel of Fire Warriors 2010 AD. Now, this movie is from 2009.
Yes.
And it's very hard to find. We went to Scarecrow Video, the finest video
store in the world. Yes.
Would you like to do a little speech about how great Scarecrow Video is?
Scarecrow Video is not just a huge video store. It is kind of a film archive with hundreds of thousands of movies, ranging from amazingly good films to super rare foreign films, to gems like Steel of Fire Warriors 2010 AD.
Yes. We were watching some of the Scarecrow Telethon today, because it's Video Store Day.
Yes.
Normally they have a lot of in-store events, but I don't know if you've heard, no in-store events right now.
So they're doing a telethon, and it's super entertaining. They're also a nonprofit, and they have their own YouTube channel, the Scarecrow Video YouTube channel, so you can always check them out there. If you want to be entertained.
They shouted out Rias during the telethon.
I know. As soon as I turned on the TV, a voice came out and said, "Hey, shout out to Rias." So I felt pretty special for a couple seconds.
Because Rias, of course, used to work at Scarecrow. That is not where all of her film knowledge comes from. She was a film nerd before that. That's how you got the job.
But 13 years in a giant video archive did not hurt.
Now,
the ability to watch any film I want at any time without having to rely on streaming is rare and special.
The reason I brought up the telethon was that the voice that said shout out to Rias was a Mr. Kevin Clark, a kind of spindly guy with a beard and, at the moment we turned it on, a full head of hair. But they reached their goal of 15,000.
And we got to watch him get his head shaved
into a mohawk.
which is what he has in this movie.
Because Kevin Clark of Scarecrow Video was one of the creators of Steel of Fire Warriors AAD.
Yes, in fact, when I went to rent this movie, it was the director of this film who handed it across the counter to me and said, "You're going to do a podcast?" The director is Will Long in association with Kevin Clark.
Yeah, and Travis Vogt.
And Travis Vogt.
So what you have here are two guys, Travis Vogt and Kevin Clark, both at the time Scarecrow Video employees and also Seattle-based stand-up comics.
And the plot of the movie is...
I was going to get into, like, who made the movie and...
Oh, okay.
So Travis and Kevin were a comedy team. I believe they still are.
Yeah, I don't know.
They used to make wacky movies. And what they would do is at the, I think, the Sunset Tavern, they would show up and in addition to hosting the night, they'd say, "And now here's the latest chapter of our post-apocalyptic epic, Steel of Fire Warriors 2010 AD.
Right, and they'd show a little segment of it, like every week at the comedy night. And it was super fun. Lots of really good comedy. And these movies.
And this movie contains Travis and Kevin and also a bunch of their pals. Seattle-based comic institutions like Emmett Montgomery are in it. Also famous people like Reggie Watts.
And by which we mean Reggie Watts.
Well, there's also Solomon Giorgio. He is a Seattle comic who I think is breaking nationally now.
Yeah, I've seen him on... He was on The Tonight Show at some point. So good for Solomon.
And Danielle Radford, who is somebody I have heard of in a non-Seattle context. She hosts a podcast on Maximum Fun called Tights and Fights. I think
is that about wrestling?
Yeah, it is about wrestling.
Oh, that's awesome. And she's super nice.
Yeah. And Rice was actually involved in the prep of this movie in later chapters.
I donated some costume parts.
Yeah. A real cool gas mask was back. So, now that you kind of have a context for this movie, Seattle video store slash stand-up comics made a post-apocalyptic movie.
And weirdly enough, it's better than some of the other post-apocalyptic movies we have reviewed.
It is super funny. So, Rias, explain...
The plot.
Get us into the world of Steel of Fire Warriors AD, 2010 AD.
Kevin and Travis are found as babies.
They play characters named Kevin and Travis.
Yes. Yeah. And are raised by the guy that finds them to be Steel of Fire Warriors, who are great and honorable... And believe in restoring the world to peace, I guess, or something?
It's not clear. We only really know Kevin and Travis. There are a bunch of other Steel of Fire Warriors, and they get killed right away.
Yeah.
And then later on, they create a whole army of Steel of Fire Warriors, a lot like in The Postman, except most of those guys are off screen.
Well, we see a couple of Steel of Fire Warriors later.
Yeah.
When like Wishy Flexiglass.
Well, Flexiglass, that's right. Flexiglass, we thought, was killed, but he
shows
up
later.
There's also Betrayor.
Right. So when Kevin and Travis fight their way to the Steel of Fire Warriors home camp, they find everyone dead.
Except for their old friend, Betrayor. I love Betrayor. So everybody in this movie declaims everything. Like, they're getting more evil by the moon. And there's a robot called Robobot, so that Travis can say things like, "Enough of your space age nonsense, battery breath."
Yeah, it's got a lot of lines like that.
Except Betrayor just talks normally, so they say, "What happened here, Betrayor?" I don't know, man. I wasn't here. I don't know. It's really funny.
Yes. The movie begins with this great opening crawl. First, the world was normal. People were happy. Then the apocalypse happened, and everything changed.
So as you can see, this movie is clearly on theme for us. One of the things I like to do for these movies is ask, do we know what happened? Yes, there was an apocalypse.
Yes, we don't know exactly what caused the apocalypse, but the space shuttle has crashed
into the
Space Needle. And generally, there's a shot of Seattle that just looks like it's all messed up.
Yeah. And then from that point on, the entire movie is shot in a couple local parks. Ravenna Park, a park I'm very familiar with. And also Gasworks Park, which is a really cool looking park with lots of neat, weird machinery.
Where everyone shoots their local movies. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's been an apocalypse. The world is being overrun by mutant zoids who reign unchallenged under the rulership of Lord Gilgazorg.
Lord Gilgazorg! Lord Gilgazorg has a kind of pie plate hat and a metallic face, which is very clearly a white plastic Phantom of the Opera mask that has been spray painted silver.
And as the movie progresses, the paint does not stick to the mask and just starts flaking off, and it's a great look.
Because every chapter came out like every month or so, want to say.
Right. So in the beginning of the movie, they're walking through the forest and they find this guy called the Kid. They decide to train him up to be a Steel of Fire warrior. And they return to the town to find everyone murdered. Then Lord Gilgazord is there, laughing because he has just murdered all of the Steel of Fire warriors.
Lord Gilgazord is one of those evil lords that really enjoys a good laugh.
Oh, he laughs a lot.
I'm just reading the lines.
They attack Gilgazorg in a fight, which is...
It says here, extremely amateurish, unless that's one of the other fights.
No, that's all the fight scenes. They're wonderful. They're shot great. You get a bunch of people with no fight training whatsoever, and you get someone who can edit that together and do their god-given best.
A lot of the
fights, and you get the fight scenes in this movie.
A lot of the fights have choreography, but it's done very slow. Travis's signature weapon is two paper plates that have been cut so they're pointy on the outside and then glued together. He kind of holds them through a hole in the middle.
It's a flying guillotine.
Holds it out, and then there's a cut, and then you see it sort of spinning through the air while the sound effect is, I'm pretty sure, somebody going...
And then you see blood and someone's arm lying on the ground.
Yeah.
Great work.
Oh, it's so good.
They get to the town. Gilgazord is there. Their friends are all dead. And then Gilgazord kills the Kid.
Oh, no, the Kid.
On the way out of town, they meet Robobot, who Kevin has originally built.
Yep. And Travis hates Robobot.
Robobot is not working very well, so they tape some stuff to his cardboard box. It fixes him right up.
He says things like, cannot electro-robo-computate. And this will be relevant later. He is a cardboard box robot covered in tinfoil with a great big box for his torso and a small box for his head with a hole cut out in the middle.
Right, so that's how his face, the actor's face is.
This will be relevant for my favorite sight gag in the whole show.
Yes.
They also run into Betrayor.
Right, Betrayor they run into in the town, and he's like, what? I don't know how Gilgazord found this camp. Come on. My note here is the tinfoil and masking tape was probably the most expensive part of their budget, because they use a lot of it.
Yeah.
Kevin, after repairing Robobot, he and Travis have a huge fight. And then they split up.
Yep. They have the most amateurish fight scene, which is very funny.
It's great.
They say things like, we do not fully understand his dark magics yet, Kevin. You can't punch hate holes in everything, especially your own soul.
Refurl your tongue. That's my favorite. So then Gilgazorg has a little monologue with a lot of laughing, and Betrayor is clearly working for him. And we see their separate adventures. Travis goes off into the forest and meets Girlexia.
Girlexula, or girl for short.
Yeah, that's what she likes to be called, is girl.
I want to convey a couple lines of dialogue here. I'm making Rias do the plot on this one because
all Monty wrote down were jokes.
I wrote down stuff, but when Travis first meets Girlexula, he says, I've never seen such supple breasts on what is obviously a man before. She says, I'm not a man, I'm a woman. Then he says, I've never seen a man with such low self-esteem either. The writing on this is legitimately excellent.
Yeah, yeah. These are very funny people. I
am a sucker for smart people doing really, really stupid stuff. And lines like, Travis's poor judgment and fat leadership skills. Oh, it's good times.
So Travis fights and is defeated by Girlexia, who then nurses him back to health,
mm-hmm.
kindly. He does actually decide that she is a girl and calls her, I believe, vagina jockey. Because it's a classy movie. Then they meet the Dark Ones.
The Shadow People.
The Shadow People, which are Solomon Giorgio.
All right, I'm going to slow you down. You've skipped a bunch.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is where Betrayer, Kevin has gone off with Betrayer to Gasworks Park, which represents the old world.
Yes.
Daunt
Mutantzoids.
Then Betrayer stabs Kevin in the back. So Kevin says, I can't believe you just stabbed me in the back, Betrayer. It makes no sense. Why did it have to be you? It gets funnier every time. Then Kevin goes to a bar full of Mutantzoids, one of which is just wearing devil mask, trying to find out where Lord Gilgazorg is. And this is where Reggie Watts is. He's wearing a gas mask, but he's got Reggie Watts' hair sticking out.
It's pretty awesome.
Then the Shadow People show up.
Yes, the Shadow People are in Travis's story. Kevin's story is going to the bar with after having been destroyed by Betrayer. He's got Robobot with him, and he's looking for some Mutantzoids.
I say that the Shadow People are called that because they are black. This is where Solomon Giorgio is.
Yeah.
Are you up to Zhao Peng yet?
Oh, no.
Okay.
I haven't gotten there. I've gotten to...
I have Zhao Peng in the line right after the Shadow People showing up.
Okay.
So,
Kevin's been driving. He is overwhelmed by Mutantzoids at one point in another full-on battle scene, but Robobot manages to save him.
Yeah, Robobot is excellent at computation and fighting, and eventually shows up and just lasers these guys.
Right, and then we see Travis back with Girlexia. He meets the Shadow People. They all fall in love with him.
Immediately,
because Steel of Fire Warrior powers.
Yeah.
And then we meet your friend, Zhao Peng.
Zhao Peng is the absolute worst. He is a bad-looking puppet who speaks in a generically...
Racist
accent and says things like, me so sorry. And everyone else goes, Zhao Peng.
Zhao Peng. And he is great. And I love him. So, after a while, the Woracle appears. The Woracle is a guiding force to the Steel of Fire Warriors. And he appears to Travis and tells him, our forces are in splintering disarrayment.
It's very clear, by the way, that every month they came up with a new thing to do, so the plot's kind of all over the place.
It's delightful, though.
Yeah, it's great.
It sticks together better than the plot in many of the movies we've seen.
Like, a lot of these movies, you start to think after about 20 minutes, yeah, I get it, can you do something else? Well, in this movie...
They do something else.
It's time for the Woracle.
And the Woracle shows Travis the future in which Kevin is being tortured. Oh, no.
Oh, no, Kevin. Somewhere around here, Kevin does shake... All right, right before Kevin goes into the bar, he shaves his head into a mohawk.
Yes.
Which, the actual person, Kevin Clark, seems to be pretty casual about his hairstyle.
Yeah, because we just saw him get shaved into a mohawk as a fundraiser for Scarecrow. So
he goes through 5 or 6 hairstyles and facial hair configurations during this movie.
It's pretty funny.
Just deal with it. Time has passed.
We have learned that Betrayer... is part Mutantzoid. He always wears a glove because he's got a Mutantzoid hand.
Gasp!
He returns to the old world. Betrayer stabs him.
Uh-huh.
No, Betrayer stabs Travis, and then Galaxia saves him.
Yep, I had that earlier in my thing.
And one of the lines in that battle is, your vagina is too existent for you to defeat me. Gilgazorg's dying, Girlexia saves him, the Shadow People, Zhao Peng.
See, this is the problem with this plot. We could have exactly the same stuff written down in both of our notes, but there's no way
to know.
So I'm just going to say another line I like. This is going to be easier than I thought. Almost too easy. Just the way I like it. I think that's very funny.
There's some really great lines.
So the next note I have is about the visual gag I really like. So let me know when it's time to talk about that.
Kevin sets out with Robobot because the people in the bar have told him where Gilgazorg lives.
See? Perfectly logical plot.
But Gilgazorg has been hiding in the bar and told them to tell him that. So Kevin walks directly with Robobot into Gilgazorg's trap.
Oh no!
Tricked by a decoy. Surrounded by Mutantzoids. Robobot destroyed.
So, Robobot, we have been told, is incredible at fighting. And indeed, he has lasered a lot of mutant zoids.
Yeah, he's got eyeball lasers, I believe.
But, Lord, I don't know that the lasers were lined up with any specific part of his anatomy.
Hey, they're just lasers shooting out of him. He's a robot, that's what happens.
So Lord Gilgazorg grabs him and rips his head off, which means we see Lord Gilgazorg holding the empty box that was Robobot's head. Then we see all the way into the box. It's clearly empty. He throws it down on the ground. We see it empty. We cut back to Kevin, saying something along the lines of, no! And we cut back. And now, picture the frame of the screen, right? The bottom of the box, which is on its side, is right on the edge of the TV screen.
Right.
So that the actor can be sticking his head into it from the side.
It's good. It's brilliant.
It's such a good twist on the standard severed head sticking up out of a table move, which they do several times in this movie. So his head is sticking in from the side. He does a few standard Robobot lines. And then Lord Gilgazorg crushes his head by stepping on the box, which this time is empty.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good sequence because it's done badly enough that you can see every gimmick, but it also works because they're good gimmicks. So you get the fun of the plot, but you also get the fun of, you guys really did this the most amateurish way possible, but I like that effect there.
Yeah.
Because it does look like he crushed that head that had a head in it. It's really good.
Kevin is then trapped by Gilgazorg, who is going to torture him and turn him into a weapon against all the Steel of Fire warriors.
Yep. Kevin tries to kill himself to keep from becoming a weapon Lord Gilgazorg could use against the Steel of Fire warriors, but Lord Gilgazorg this time has a magnet mouth that pulls stuff to it. Yes, that happened. You blinked for a second.
Lord Gilgazorg's magnet mouth, but I will believe you.
I stand by it. Magnet mouth.
And meanwhile, we get to see a training montage as Travis, with some other people he has gathered up, including the Shadow People and Gerlaxia, they are raising an army and training so that they can take down Gilgazorg. They're learning the Steel of Fire warrior way.
Yes.
After Kevin has been tortured long enough, he is forced to compete in kill sport.
Yes, this is the only sport in the world now.
His new name is Kilgazorg.
So now he is the champion and he kills a guy.
He goes into the ring. He has to fight Flaxiglass.
Oh, Flaxiglass.
They're planning to do a fake fight, but Kilzorg, that's his name now, is brain controlled and murders Flaxiglass.
Oh, no.
Then Yao Ping is looking. Oh, you got something to say?
I do. Right now, around now, I wrote down, this movie is very nostalgic for Rias. Because she keeps saying things like, Laird! Oh, I miss Laird! Because the whole movie is people she knows, really.
Yeah.
It's like people she worked with every day for years.
Yeah, Laird works at the Alamo Draft House. I think he hosts their Weird Wednesdays or something.
Oh, cool.
He's a great guy. But also, he's a mutant zoid. let's see. Then we cut to Zhao Ping wandering through the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And what does he find in the forest as he sings his little Zhao Ping song about how no one loves him?
He finds a naked Kevin, because Kevin has shaken off his programming and staggered into the woods.
But he's still wearing a ridiculously matted long wig, which is just so sad.
And he doesn't remember anything. So Zhao Ping wakes him up, and Kevin starts strangling him. So Zhao Ping says, me no likey. And then,
me no likey.
Oh, my throaty woaty.
Wow, you sound just like him.
I'm very good. This is what Zhao Ping sounds like. He's the worst character.
He's terrible. Kevin gets hit in the head with a stick and regains some of his memory and then is reunited with Travis.
Eventually. This is a scene where Travis walks in and says, do we have the prisoner? But not looking at Kevin, so he doesn't know who it is. And they just really stretch that out.
They stretch that out for like 5 minutes until it becomes just funnier and funnier as he finds different ways not to look over and notice that the prisoner is his
like sliding brother. Into the scene. So he's staring directly away from Kevin. Then I think we're going to get to the big fight, right?
We're getting there. Okay. We're getting there. We've got a moment where Kevin and Zhao Ping have a quiet moment and talk about And Xiaoping asks if he can be the new Robobot Man, which very, very heartwarming moment.
Xiaoping is going to suffer a horrible fate in a science fiction movie made by these guys later on.
Yeah, he kind of does.
Somebody wears him as a wig. A wig Rias made to look like
that's
the
not
scout.
A wig. That was a loincloth. But Kevin's killer programming kicks in and he ends up betraying everyone, tying them up. Then Mutantzoids show up and Killzorg Kevin wanders away. Xiaoping follows, but Kevin tries to kill him. But Xiaoping's true love for Kevin breaks the spell.
He's still the worst.
So they go back to camp and free everybody, and then they fight off the henchmen.
Yeah.
And then they all, as an army, return to Old World for the final apocalypse battle.
In this final apocalypse battle, one of the Mutantzoids has a bag over his head, and you think, oh, that's cute, he just has an ugly face. They use it for exactly the same gag as when Robobot's head got crushed, but this time it's
Yeah,
Zhao
this time
Peng.
It's just a bag.
This time it's Xiaoping with a metal baseball bat smashing this bag, and I think they had a water balloon or
something
in it.
Blood in it, so blood is splattering, and it's
even though
pretty
it's
gross.
Extremely goofy, and there's no question in your mind how these special effects got done. It's really fun to watch, and you said that's the bat from Scarecrow.
Yeah, I know that baseball bat. I chased someone out of the store with it one night.
This is how nostalgic this movie is for her.
So, yeah,
and
it
even
kills
the
me. I'm like, oh, that crazy guy came in and started tearing the store up, and I had to chase him out with that bat. It's, yeah, it's so sentimental for me, this movie. Let's see. Gilgazorg is unmasked, and his unmasking tears a pinhole in space-time. So they again meet the Oracle.
Yep.
Who explains that Kevin and Travis are Gilgazord's cursed sons. And if they kill Gilgazord, they and all Mutantzoids will die. So they kill Gilgazord, sacrificing themselves for all of mankind.
But somewhere around now, Grelexula and the Lady of the Shadow People have given birth to baby Kevin and Travis.
Yes.
And I think it's Xiaoping that names them.
Yes. The two women have given birth to Travis's children, two boys. Xiaoping names them Kevin and Travis and then goes on to raise them. And we see a scene that says 20 years later, and then we see Kevin and Travis hanging out with Xiaoping,
and
telling war stories.
And this is a shot. It's the modern world again. Civilization came back. We're saved.
Yeah. So basically they just walked out of the park and into the neighborhood next to the park.
So I made a little list on standard post-apocalypse movies tropes to see how well this movie matches
up. Oh, yeah,
up
because we have been keeping track of what we think the standard tropes are.
Right. At the end of this year, I want to be able to say we are experts on the post-apocalypse. Admittedly, so is the rest of America. What?
High five!
Political commentary. You weren't expecting it. And so clever, too. Since
I know. That was very subtle. I'm not sure our listeners are going to get
No one would have seen that joke coming for the sixth time this episode. So, checklist. What happened? The apocalypse.
Yes.
We don't know what apocalypse, but there are Mutantzoids.
People were happy, and then everything changed after the apocalypse. No one was happy.
Are there troglodytes? Yes, there are Mutantzoids.
Right.
I never knew before this year how essential to the genre troglodytes.
Me neither. I'm really surprised by how many of the films we've seen feature troglodytes living underground and capturing people and being,
I got a theory about that. It's because we want somebody for the heroes to fight. And if we call them troglodytes, we can cover up the stunt people with masks.
Oh. Yeah, okay.
Are there shoulder pads? There were not shoulder pads.
No, they were mostly wearing army surplus jackets.
Yeah, like camo pants randomly wrapped in aluminum foil or with duct tape along lines.
That was masking tape. Yeah. With like X's of masking tape randomly applied to them.
The Mutantzoids do have gas masks, and one of them has a gas mask with real cool spikes on it. That's the one Rias made.
It's true, and later sold at a yard sale.
It is prominent, I would say. People wearing that gas mask tend to get killed in the center of the frame up close. It's the hero one. Is there a convenient set that people can use, like the quarry or
yes,
a boiler.
Yes, they use the boiler room at Gasworks Park. Gasworks Park has an old gas plant there.
It's great.
So there's lots of big pipes and boilers and such.
And also Ravenna Park, the one in University District of Seattle.
And you were getting all sentimental about
my
those
God.
Scenes
okay.
because Monty...
So, a long time ago... Hang on. I have to decide how to approach this. I'm going to drag you down with me. Rias and I met as part of the Camarilla. That's the fan club for White Wolf's
World of Darkness.
World of Darkness. I forget what the Camarilla is called now. It's something silly. I don't care. Point is, vampire LARPing. Running around pretending to be a vampire. It's
or a werewolf.
In this case, it was werewolf. We were being Garou. That's what they're called in White Wolf.
Yes.
And we were role-playing outside because the Garou are kind of environmental warriors.
Right. Yeah.
So we ended up saying, if we're going to LARP this, why don't we do it someplace cool? And there, so we found this little pools in Ravenna Park, and we called it the Cairn. And for, I think it was like a year and a half, I went out there every year and had some really good times. And they shot some scenes of this movie there. And I was like, oh, look, I know that pool. Oh, do not drink from that.
Pretty much, yeah. So because it's shot in our hometown and it has people in it that I know that are kind of like family to me, even though I haven't worked for a couple of years.
I haven't seen my family in a couple of years.
Yeah, well, that's true. So this movie had a lot of extra emotional baggage.
Yeah.
In a good way attached to it.
Absolutely.
It made us very happy. But also, I think that people who have never seen it before would also be made very happy because it is super funny and well written and
it does
just astonishingly itself.
I think it's very clear that the dumb stuff it does is on purpose.
Yeah.
And so let's see, next, does somebody have a mohawk? Yes, Kevin gives himself a mohawk.
Yes.
And somehow gets a mustache in the process of that. And
well, it's been a few weeks.
I mean, that very much looks like, well, he didn't have a mustache last scene, but we have to give him one this scene. So that's what happened. It's great. There is, of course, an evil lord with a silly voice and mask. There is a future death sport. Kill sport.
Kill sport. You're right.
I love post-apocalyptic movies with futuristic death sports.
Futuristic death sports are my favorite kind of death sports.
There wasn't a scarce thing that's like money. There was no gasoline or bullets.
No, you're right. They weren't out of... There was no scarcity.
Yeah.
That they were fighting against.
There's no water. There was no safe city that they were trying to battle their way to. That doesn't always happen.
Yeah,
but
it did happen in a few of the Mad Max movies. It happens, yeah.
It tends to be called Sanctuary, which I still think is a weird thing to call your city before the apocalypse. But overall, clearly a post-apocalyptic movie.
Clearly.
Super, super fun. Really enjoy watching this movie.
Yeah.
Now, how can you watch it? You can't, unless you go to Scarecrow. But you can, or rent
you can
it
get
by
it
mail.
At Scarecrow. Scarecrow does do rentals by mail. You can call them and rent, have them mail it to you. It used to be on YouTube. I may be trying to see if Kevin and Travis would be willing to put it up somewhere. If it is, we'll let you know.
It was online on their Funny or Die.
It was on Funny or Die.
But it's not there anymore, and that's a shame.
Yeah.
I vote funny. I really, really like Steel of Fire Warriors 2010 AD.
Yeah. It is a movie that my friends made that I am not afraid to show to people who aren't friends with them.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, if you're in a movie that your friends made, it's something that you watch with those friends and you giggle about it. It's not something you show other people.
But this was
this
made
movie, totally good for a general audience who doesn't mind amazing amounts of profanity.
There's a lot of profanity.
That Kevin can swear up a storm.
That's how you could. That's how Travis recognizes Kevin at one point, because of the ridiculous profanity. I mean, it was made for an audience. It's not just
yeah, it's made
off.
For it's made for an audience in a bar that was a little drunk.
But I think
and,
that's important. A lot of cheap movies are made just because people wanted to make a movie while they were
Veronica?
Making. Yeah. Oh boy, Veronica. But this movie, while they were making it, they were thinking, we're going to have to show this to an audience probably in a couple of hours. And if they don't laugh, that's a problem because we're going to be standing in front of them after that. It's really funny.
Yeah.
And extremely stupid.
Yep. And Kevin and Travis and Will, the guys that made it, super good people.
Yeah.
Just in general, good people.
I feel like picking the next movie we're going to watch.
All right. Shake up the box. Okay.
You picked the last one, and you did a great job.
I know. I picked a fun movie, and during the quarantine, we need a fun movie now and then.
Well, the next movie we're going to watch is called Death Sport.
Oh, I think I own that one.
Is that the David Carradine one?
That's the David Carradine one where they had to make up a kind of sword play because
oh,
the swords
right,
were...
Right, 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 right.
Yeah.
They have big, cool-looking plastic swords and discovered that whenever they hit each other, they would shatter. So they had to invent a whole new sword fighting where they wave around these big fancy swords.
A lot
never
of the sword fights
anything.
Are filmed in close-up.
Oh, so good.
It's,
all right. Death Sport. I'm up for that 100%.
Yay!
Anything else you want to talk about while we got these people here?
I don't know. I don't really have anything to plug.
No, nor do I. I was on this podcast, the Great American Pop Quiz Show, I think it's called. It's at usaquizshow.com. It's pop culture trivia. They have a whole season, and I got to the finals, and I think I was really smart and funny, and
I think you're very smart and funny.
She hasn't listened to those episodes, though.
Hey, that's
I understand.
True.
She
but
hears
I have
me plenty.
Been locked in a house with you for over 6 months.
And I'm
if
still
I
alive.
If I did not think you were smart and funny, you would not be alive.
Well, I like the amount of pressure you just put on me now.
Dance for me, little boots.
So you don't think I spend enough time trying to prove I'm smart and funny?
Oh, God.
Bye.